to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Sunday, September 13th, week 9 of the fantasy baseball waiver season. Michael Beller here with Derek Van Riper. There's a lot to talk about again today, Beller. Lots of streaming pitchers, a few closer situations in flux. Unfortunately, a lot of hitter injuries have opened up playing time for some hitters that might be of interest for the stretch run. So we're going to get right to it. Let's start with starting pitchers, where Jose Urquidy still not universally rostered, which is a surprise to me. I mean, he's owned, I think, in 100% of NFBC main event leagues at this point, but he went deep enough in his last start where you're really not worried about workload restrictions for him. He's got a matchup against Texas coming up this week, and I think of the pitchers we're going to discuss today, he's easily the most skilled of the bunch. I can't even think of a reason why he's not universally rostered at this point. So is there any case against Urquidy with that matchup against the Rangers this week?
I don't think so, especially if you need to add a starting pitcher. Like you said, he pretty much should be universally owned. He's easily the most talented of the guys that he's got, or that we've got coming up, and the matchups that he's got coming up really don't scare you in any sort of way. So this is a pretty easy plug-and-play add sort of situation if he's out there. I feel like it's so obvious that the places where he isn't owned has to be circumstantial, has to be like leagues that have given up on this season or something along those lines, because this is just such an obvious add.
Now, we're still talking about a guy who's only had about 50 career regular season innings at the big league level. Of course, he pitched really well in the postseason for the Astros last year, but Urquidy now has a 43-13 strikeout to walk ratio in 50 2/3 innings, a 3.91 ERA, a 1.13 WHIP. The skills are there. I think he's a top 40 starting pitcher looking ahead to 2021, so there's no reason why you shouldn't trust him with a home matchup against Texas. It gets messy from there, though. Like, every other pitcher I wrote about in the column, every other pitcher that's available in most leagues is going to bring some flaws to the table. But LJ Newsom kind of stood out to me as the next best option. He's a rookie in Seattle. It's really a command first profile, and the stuff is still developing, still somewhat of a question. The one thing you do got to keep an eye on with Newsom, he was hit by a comebacker in his last start, so he's got a bruised hand. Technically day-to-day, he is expected to make his next start, which comes at home against San Francisco. There's kind of a two-part question here. I mean, one, do you trust Newsom as a guy with very little big league experience? This will only be his third big league start and fourth appearance overall. And, you know, so far, 7 Ks, no walks in those 8 1/3 innings that he's pitched. Do you trust a matchup against San Francisco when you consider how good the Giants' offense has actually been? It's been one of the more pleasant surprises of this season. They're sixth in terms of team WRC+. Are you comfortable picking on them with that matchup? Are you comfortable doing it with Newsom in particular?
Yeah, I don't love it, but like you said, it's pretty much a mess behind Urquidy when we're looking at likely available starting pitchers. So if you need a pitcher, you're in a very pure beggars can't be choosers situation. And I do think that Newsom, when you look at the rest of the guys we're going to talk about, and you'll hear all those guys very shortly, probably the best of the bunch. So it makes me more interested in chasing him. As you said, incredibly limited sample for what we've seen from him in the majors so far. But the thing that interests me most, if I'm going to latch onto something from the actual performance and the actual numbers, is the zero walks. That doesn't happen by accident, even over just 7 innings. So yeah, I feel pretty decent about him being able to be a guy who lives in the strike zone, be a guy who forces hitters to earn their way on. So I'll trust him for that. I don't love the matchup. I don't necessarily love the underlying skill set here. But again, beggars can't be choosers. If I need a pitcher and I can't get Urquidy, he's probably the guy I turn to first.
Yeah, you look at some of the other names, and a lot of Royals coming up in this discussion, right? And perhaps one guy who will face them. Although we learned on Saturday, Brett Anderson, who was lined up to face Kansas City at home late next week, he was scratched from a start on Saturday due to right hip tightness. So whether he's able to make it back into the rotation next week is very much an unknown. I think that really sort of tempers your bid, even really changes some of the situations in which you'd actually bid on him. And of course, the problem with Brett Anderson is that he doesn't strike a lot of guys out. But that was just a case where streaming at home against the Royals made a lot of sense because he's widely available and you're looking for win probability at this point in the season, too, in a lot of cases. You're not always going to find somebody that can bring 8 to 10 strikeouts to the table as a potential in-start sort of ceiling. But let's break down these Royals for a second, because Chris Bubik, Jake Junis, and Brady Singer are actually pretty widely available. The ratios are not pretty. We're talking about two rookies and one guy in Junis who has been on and off the fantasy mixed league radar now for parts of a couple of seasons. Mm-hmm. Of those three, is there one that you really believe in the most, where you have Bubik and Singer facing the Brewers on the road? Brewers have been striking out a ton this season. And then Junis actually draws the Tigers on the road, so he gets a slightly easier matchup.
Yeah, can I actually do sort of the reverse here and say there's one guy I won't trust, and then I'll sort of let it decide between the other two? It's Junis is the guy who I don't want. And it's because of exactly the reason you said. We know what he is. On and off the fantasy radar for a few years now, he's a streamer in ideal conditions at best. And even in those ideal conditions, sometimes that stream play doesn't come through. I'm just not really particularly interested in a guy like that. I want to believe in something beyond just circumstances leading a guy into my fantasy lineup. So I would take him out of the equation. I would go to Bubik or to Singer. And I guess I'll go with Singer. You do like the fact that even though this is a tougher matchup, as you said, the Brewers have been striking out quite a bit this year. And while Singer has been, I don't know if you would characterize this rookie year as a mild disappointment, I think that's probably fair. We did see what the ceiling can be in that outing against the Indians when he held them hitless for 7 2/3. And, you know, when the stuff comes together for him, he can still be a pretty effective pitcher. We can expect him to be a relatively effective pitcher as he's winding up his rookie season. So he's the one who jumps out at me. If Bubik was the guy who jumped out at you, I wouldn't think you were crazy. I think Junis is the guy that you probably want to avoid in this discussion.
Yeah, Junis is trying to change up that pitch mix. He's going really heavy with that slider usage. I think the problem is he still doesn't have a good, consistent third pitch. It's slider fastball. That's really all he's bringing to the table. You think about guys that go 40% slider and don't have a good fastball. Yolis Chacin is always where my mind goes, and that is a really difficult line to walk. So I'm lukewarm on him. I do have him ranked ahead of Brady Singer, I think, in part because Brady Singer's been kind of all over the road so far in his rookie campaign. Not a big surprise, just given that he's making the leap this season from, I think it was from Double A, was where he stopped last year. But I look at Bubik, and something about his profile gives me a little extra confidence. He just got his first win last week against the Pirates, so if you streamed him for that, you were rewarded. So maybe you're even holding on to him after picking him up for that particular matchup. But I think he can continue to get deep into his starts. He's gone at least 5 innings each of his last 3 times out. Had a couple of rough outings against Minnesota, kind of sandwiched in the middle of his season. But you take the Twins out of the equation, and he's gone 5, actually in 5 of his last 7 starts now. So you're going to get a little bit of strikeout potential. I don't think he's necessarily as prone to the short start where he basically is his own worst enemy with his pitch count. And I think that's what gives me that little bit of extra confidence in Chris Bubik being the best of the three available Royals in a lot of leagues. But Cole Hamels is also a name that is on the radar again. He's getting closer to a return. I think this is one where, as much as the Braves need him back and getting him stretched out in the final weeks of the season is going to be a priority, because they definitely are going to want to try and get him into their playoff rotation, I'm not sure he's viable in fantasy leagues down the stretch. He threw 3 simulated innings on Friday, according to The Athletic's David O'Brien. For me, that means he's not going more than 4 and change, maybe 5 if he's extremely efficient in his first start back. But he's not going to pitch until at least the middle of the week. So coming off an injury, having some workload concerns, and, you know, still not really necessarily being completely healthy. He's coming off a triceps injury. So I think he's definitely more of a wait and see for me. Like, if he comes back this week and pitches well in a short start, maybe we're having this conversation again next Sunday with some more confidence that Cole Hamels can actually be helpful.
Yeah, I think you nailed that exactly. You can't trust him this first time out. Well, you got to see what he is. We got to see how much he can actually pitch, see how stretched out he can get. You just can't play him in this first start. And I would bet we're not talking about him, no matter how well he pitches. It just feels like a let's get Cole ready for the playoffs sort of thing here for a team that is absolutely desperate for starting pitching with all the injuries it has had this season. I don't think we are talking about Cole Hamels in a viable fantasy way until 2021.
Yeah, that's definitely where I'm at. We got a question about a pitcher who's available in some leagues. I didn't put him in the column this week because I had him in, I think, last week. But Davey Garcia is lined up for a two-star week for the Yankees. I mean, of the options we've talked about, I think I like him even more than Urquidy, if we're going to be honest about just ranking these guys completely. I have no hesitation with Davey Garcia because he's looked really good in his first three starts. Hard to say that about a 21-year-old with so little experience, but how about an 18-2 strikeout-to-walk ratio so far in his young big league career?
Yeah, I think you're totally right there. Davey Garcia is the guy who I would feel best about, too. And yes, that also includes Jose Urquidy for me. So that's a pretty easy one for me. That 18-2 looks beautiful. Just like I said with LJ Newsome, right? If we're going to latch onto something in a very, very small sample, let's latch on to strikeout-to-walk ratio, at least one of those three. And he's got all three. Davey Garcia does. So I do think that he is a easily trustable guy in this two-start turn here.
Victor has a question about Robbie Anderson. He says he has Cortland Sutton and Kenny Galladay. We'll save that for the Athletic Fantasy Cheat Sheet.
It's going to be a long day.
Yeah, it's going to be a long day. So Victor's very excited for the live stream. And I'm glad. I'm excited for it, too. So we'll get to some more questions as we roll along here on today's Fantasy Baseball Pod. Two start weeks, I mean, I didn't see a lot of available guys. It was Kyle Freeland. Oh, I'm sorry, that was for this week. I didn't see a lot of interesting available guys this week. I guess Dane Dunning, if he's available in your league. I mean, sure, why not? At this point, unless you're protecting ratios, two-star pitches are absolutely gold. So if you're in a more shallow league, an 8 or a 10-team league, or you're in a league with some smaller rosters, Dane Dunning would also be in that conversation. I'd put him behind Davey Garcia in part because that matchup against the Twins is absolutely brutal, but there's also a little bit of a talent gap between those two pitchers as well.
Yeah, I mean, 21 strikeouts and 20 innings pitched also for Dunning, so you can feel pretty good about the strikeout upside every time he takes the mound. And I'm going to pull it up, but I feel like the one bad start that he did have, he still gave you a decent amount of strikeouts, which just goes to show that, yeah, it was against the Royals of all teams, and they touched him up a little bit, but he still had 4 strikeouts in 4 2/3 innings. Gave up 3 runs, walked 4 guys, 5 hits, didn't have his best stuff, wasn't super sharp in that outing. But 4 strikeouts and 4 2/3. It just goes to show you that strikeout upside always goes to the mound with Dane Dunning. So I would be comfortable even taking on that twin start and that tough matchup in his first outing of the week to get the strikeout upside and get the good matchup later in the week as well.
There's some other random two-start guys that are kind of available. Julio Teheran, who has not pitched well so far this year, he draws 2. He's got Arizona at home and Texas at home. If ratios are just kind of off the table, they don't really matter anymore, they're already either really safe or they've been completely destroyed, I think you could justify throwing Teheran out there. You don't have to bid a lot to get him, but I don't like him. Like the guys we talked about a little bit, I don't really like Julio Teheran in his current form at all, so just be very careful if you go that route. I mean, Antonio Senzatella gets 2, but they're both at Coors, and they're reasonably tough matchups, too. He's home against Oakland and home against the Dodgers, so that one's pretty low on the list. I'd put that even below Teheran, because even though Senzatella's pitched well this season, Beller, how can you trust 2 at Coors?
Yeah, Dodgers at Coors, no thanks.
you want to see a team put up 20 runs next weekend? The Dodgers might do that in Colorado. So Tony Gonsolin lined up for 2. The problem there at San Diego, not the picnic that it used to be, of course, mm-hmm. with this version of the Padres offense. And then he is on the other side of that Antonio Senzatella weekend start. He goes against the Rockies, so that takes away a lot of appeal there as well. Maybe you get 2 from Josh Lindblom because of a doubleheader Monday against the Cardinals. His second start would come against the Royals. Again, these are absolute Hail Marys, desperation right. plays if you're just scrambling, looking for innings, you can do it, but they're certainly not the best options to consider for the upcoming week. Let's talk about relief pitchers for a while. It seems like a natural segue, right? You go from talking about guys that got to make a couple starts at Coors to relievers that you don't really trust. Greg Holland has been really good this year. I didn't expect to see that at all. And Mike Matheny's been really bad to fantasy owners, you know, moving pitchers around a lot in that bullpen. But Holland continues to be the most steady, I would say, of the relievers in terms of overall value, because even when he's not getting saves, and he's had one in each of his last three appearances now, he's used in situations that are high enough leverage to get a win. He got a win in relief, pitching, I think, the sixth and the seventh back on the eighth earlier this week. So yeah, I look at Holland and I think, I don't really know how exactly he's doing it, but they are trusting him with these prominent spots to the point where if he's out there in your league, he's probably the best reliever you could add for these final 2 weeks.
Without question. Ink in his last four outings, a win and three saves, as you said, and those are his last four times to the mound, so you like that recent usage. In those three outings, you've got two, three, four, five innings and four, six, seven strikeouts without giving up anything in the way of runs, just one hit. I mean, you go back before that, an inning pitched where he struck out two guys. The strikeout upside is back with him. And now it seems as though Mike Matheny really is trusting him pretty much every time he goes to him in a high leverage situation, even if he is not the closer, the pure closer. And I think we should basically treat him that way. When you get three straight outings and save opportunities and you convert them all, pretty safe to say you are your team's closer, but let's just say for the sake of discussion, he isn't. He's going to be in there in important situations, and so you're going to be getting some sort of production out of him that is contributory to your fantasy bottom line. Easily the best reliever who is most likely available. There could be someone in your league specifically who is better than Holland, but speaking broadly, got to think Holland is the best reliever who you could actually go and grab later today.
Yeah, Rafael Dolis. Probably a close second, though.
Yeah,
that situation's a little more complicated because Ken Giles came back from the injured list on Friday. But in a blowout scenario, Giles pitched, gave up a home run. I think they're going to ease him back in. Dolis has quietly been one of the nicer stories of this 2020 season. Back after a four-year run in Japan, had bounced around in a couple of orgs prior to that, really kind of going 7 years between big league appearances, 25 Ks now in 21 and a third innings, and like Holland, a save in each of his last three appearances, a pretty nice stretch where he hasn't allowed an earned run since August 12th. And the situation for Dolis is pretty good too. Seven games coming up this week, three against the Yankees, four against the Phillies, so they're not easy matchups, but the Jays are right there in the thick of the playoff race too. So plenty of close games likely with a busy week for Rafael Dolis.
You don't love the 12 walks and 21 and a third innings that he's piled up so far this season, but you do love the 25 strikeouts. Another guy where even if Ken Giles takes the closer's job back tomorrow, which of course we don't expect, Dolis is still going to be giving you something in the way of strikeouts. So because of that, I feel pretty good about claiming him too. And I'd be willing to bet that he's got this closer's gig, or at least the favored guy for the closer's gig for, if not the entire season, at least the next week or week and a half. So you got to feel pretty good about grabbing Dolis if you can't get Holland.
Pretty much just managing everything day to day and week to week at this point, with just 2 weeks to go. In the season, Johan Ramirez has been getting some saves in Seattle. We've seen Yoshi Hirano occasionally get those opportunities as well. Last Sunday, it was Hirano. I think it was as we were trying to bid on players. He gave up a solo home run in that outing, and he pitched in Saturday's game. It wasn't a save situation. It was a scoreless inning, but that was the first time he'd pitched since Sunday, so I don't know if there was some kind of unreported injury there or what the story was, but if Johan Ramirez is still out there, you look at the schedule for this week, two against Oakland, two against San Francisco, and three against San Diego, a nice busy week. Do you think about Ramirez, even though the underlying numbers are very problematic?
Yeah, I would think about him. Again, it would be behind these first two guys that we've talked about. But if you still need someone in this context, if you need someone who's potentially going to get saves, if you need someone who you feel pretty confident about just getting innings and having strikeout upside in those innings, I think Ramirez is a fine guy to go after. But it has to fit either one of those or both of those contexts for you. I think if that's not really a play for you, if you aren't desperate for saves, if you don't necessarily need a guy who's just racking up innings and getting a couple of strikeouts in those innings, then I wouldn't chance it with my ratios. I would feel okay not claiming anyone over claiming Ramirez if I didn't need specifically what I thought he could bring to the table.
Yeah, I think there's total ratio disaster potential here, but you're not really worried about that at this point. You're just trying to squeeze a few saves out of Johan Ramirez. And look, he's missing bats. 22 Ks in 15 and two-thirds innings is good, even though 15 walks in 15 and two-thirds innings is very bad, very problematic. Stephen Crichton and Travis Bergen are now on our radar. I really don't like Arizona's closer situation at all. I was wrong about Kevin Ginkle last week. I thought he was going to be their preferred option to finish out games the rest of the way, and he is actually at the alternate site. So that was late season fab money that was poorly spent. Bergen is a lefty. He doesn't have a very long track record in the big leagues. At least with Crichton, we're talking about a guy who was a strikeout printing reliever last season, doesn't have a major walks issue. He's the righty if they go committee, so I think he'd get a few more opportunities if they split him up evenly, and there's not really any indication that that's exactly what they're going to do. We saw Crichton get the save on Friday against the Mariners. It was of the two-out variety. Is Stephen Crichton worth a bid in leagues this weekend?
Yeah, sure. I mean, this is total save desperation play. That's really all this is here, but if that's what you need, if you are desperate for saves, then, hey, maybe he'll get some. But I wouldn't feel great about going after him. All this is I need saves. He could get some saves. Let's go get him. And he's easily behind the first three guys that we've talked about here. But, you know, you're really attacking specific categories at this point of the fantasy baseball season. So you shouldn't feel bad about it if that's what you need, and go ahead and get Crichton.
Yeah. It's ugly. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's a really ugly group of relievers for this week in most leagues, but saves are very clustered in every rotisserie league that I'm in, so even just a couple of saves might be worth multiple standings points, and that could be the difference between finishing in the money and not finishing in the money this season. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about it. With a real healthcare professional who could prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to roman.com/fantasybaseball and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today and connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to getroman.com/fantasybaseball today. If you're approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's getroman.com/fantasybaseball. getroman.com/fantasybaseball. All right, Beller, let's talk about the available hitters on the wire this weekend. Actually, a more inspiring group than the closers especially, but even compared to some of the starting pitchers we were talking about, I can more easily talk myself into liking all of these hitters in some way, and I don't think that was necessarily true of most of the pitchers we talked about on this episode. I think we had the same sort of dynamic with Leody Taveras that we have with Jose Urquidy in competitive, like deeper mixed leagues. He's already been picked up everywhere, but in more shallow formats, he might still be sitting there. He's been leading off for the Rangers. He's been a regular center fielder now for a couple of weeks for them. Something they kind of desperately needed too. If you go back to the beginning of the season, back in spring training, we looked at this team. We were trying to figure out how the pieces all fit and trying to sort out the playing time for a guy like Danny Santana. And he opened the year in center field because they didn't really have a true center fielder on the big league roster. Now they do. That's what Leody Taveras is. He is a legitimate elite center fielder. Speed and defense have always been the carrying tools here. And now we're talking about a guy who's up to 4 stolen bases on the young season. The thing that's really stood out to me, he's actually hitting the ball pretty hard. Like, there's some flaws. He's making the leap from Double-A and he's really young. But if you're looking for a guy who's playing a lot, who might be able to steal you a few bases and brings just a little bit of pop to the table as well, Taveras ticks all of those boxes.
Yeah, I love the gonna play a lot box that he ticks, because that is the name of the game, right? You do not want someone who's only playing 4 days a week as you are making a charge or trying to make a charge in your standings over these last 2 weeks of the season. He's playing a lot. He's getting a lot of plate appearances, hitting top that order, and he is stealing plenty of bases, getting the green light to steal as many bases as he wants. Another stat, another category that could be pretty clustered in a lot of leagues, just given as the few entries that we get into that category. So a pretty easy add, and one where I don't think you even necessarily need exactly what he brings to the table. Obviously, you're going to be more interested in him if you do need steals, but there's enough multi-category value potential here where I would be comfortable going with him even if I didn't desperately need steals. Just love the amount of playing time he's going to get the rest of the year.
Yeah, that's the key for me here as well. He's just a big part of their plan, probably auditioning for that starting job for the start of 2021. I think there's absolutely a chance that he gets it, even if he's not leading off for this Texas team to begin next season. I think he's going to be a fixture in center field for a long time for the Rangers. Let's talk about Miguel Andujar. I think his situation is really only complicated by the fact that the Yankees might get several of their injured players back at some point in the next week. If they don't, and Andujar plays every day, and I have no doubts about his ability to hit, but he's looking at Gio Urshela and Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton all coming back. And for a guy that's been playing between third base, left field, and DH, those are three players who fill all of those gaps.
Yeah, I think early in the season, it might have been our first episode, it could have even been when we were still in the doldrums of before the season started, you and I talked about him, and I timestamped our discussion about him with the line, our kingdom for a Miguel Andujar trade. Like, let's just get this guy out of New York, please, because we know he can hit, and he's just blocked in every single spot. He could have a regular spot in the lineup in New York. So hopefully for 2021, we can get him somewhere else, and we can be talking about him as a fantasy regular. You just got to keep your eye on those three guys. You're exactly right. Once those three guys are back, you can't feel great about his playing time, but as long as, you know, one or two of them is out, then you can feel decent about his playing time. I feel good about claiming him this Sunday, knowing that he's still going to have a spot in the lineup for at least the immediate future here, and we know what he can do when he is in that Yankees lineup. So let's give Andujar one more run here. I think he's got still a week left of fantasy relevance.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see that he got a day off again on Saturday. There's a doubleheader on Friday, so I wouldn't read too much into him not playing both games there. So assuming we don't get an early activation from more than one of those three key Yankees regulars, I think you do want to put Andujar pretty high on your priority list for the weekend. Nate Lowe has been a source of frustration for me going back to last season, because I thought he had taken over the first base job a year ago from G-Man Choi. I like the skills. I don't like the situation at all. He homered twice on Friday, so that sort of opens up a lot of eyes. He got another start again on Saturday, went 1-for-3, drove in a run, and scored a run. Is this finally going to be the window for Nate Lowe to emerge as a regular for the Rays, or do you still see him getting shuttled in and out of the lineup, or at least limited primarily to opportunities against right-handed starters?
Yeah, I think the right-handed starter part of this is the big part of this. And, you know, I think we need to just sort of take Kevin Cash at what his tendencies have been and think that he's still going to get shuttled in and out of the lineup. But as you note in your column, six righties coming up as opponents for the Rays. So would I bet on Nate Lowe's playing time over the course of the next 2 months if we were in a normal season and we were just this far into a baseball season? No, I wouldn't. But over this next week, when they do have six right-handed starters lined up against them, I feel pretty good about it. I think he should definitely be on your radar as you're making bids later today.
Yeah, I like the matchups against these righties too. It's Anibal Sanchez, Austin Voth, Alex Cobb, and Dean Kramer to begin the week. So absolutely, for the first part of the week, I think Nate Lowe could be really productive. Tim LoCastro is another guy that I want to talk about. He kind of fits into the conversation where if Tavares isn't available in your league, or if you missed out on him, or you want to put him as a contingency bid behind Tavares in leagues where they're both available, I think that's a really good idea. LoCastro has top-of-the-scale speed. We're talking about a player with a 100th percentile sprint speed. It's rare to see that, of course. And he's 25-for-25 as a base stealer in his big league career, which is just off the charts. I don't remember ever seeing that before. I think we need Jason Stark to do some digging to see if any players ever started his big league career that way.
Terrence Gore, maybe?
Yeah, maybe Terrence Gore. I mean, at this point, LoCastro's playing a ton because after trading away Starling Marte, the D-backs also have lost Ketel Marte to an injury, so playing time's really not much of a concern here. And look, we talked about stolen bases earlier being really clustered. I think LoCastro can help, even though he's a guy that has a lot less raw power than someone like Taveras.
Yeah, I think so. If I was that desperate for steals person, I would probably lean toward LoCastro just because of everything you said. If I was the, I really could use steals, but I need a little bit more than just that, I would lean toward Taveras. So that's really how I am breaking it down between these two guys, because I just fear that LoCastro is really not going to bring you anything else. Sort of Billy Hamilton in his heyday when he was getting to play every day and he would steal a ton of bases, but he was doing literally nothing else. I could see LoCastro falling into that sort of tendency as well. So both guys who I would feel comfortable claiming if I needed steals, but steals only, give me LoCastro. Steals plus, give me Taveras.
Now, if you're looking for power, Tyler O'Neill should bring power. He hasn't really done as much damage as you'd expect this year. As I pointed out in the column, the strikeout rate is better than ever before. The walk rate is better than ever before. The only thing that's really changed in a negative way is that he's not hitting the ball as hard in terms of average exit velocity as we've seen in previous opportunities for him at the big league level. But if you haven't been paying attention to the upcoming schedule, you may have looked past the fact that the Cardinals still have a lot of games to make up. They have three doubleheaders this week, and they play games every single day. So they have 10 games coming up this week, and they've been playing Tyler O'Neill every day in left field. So you could look at this situation and say, even if he doesn't play both sides of two doubleheaders, or even if he doesn't play both sides of all of them, he's got a 7-game week at a minimum, and he's got a chance at playing 1.5 times as much as the next highest player on the schedule this week.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible what the Cardinals still have ahead of them this season. Really quick, just to wrap up that Terrence Gore thought, he ended up having 18 steals before getting caught his first time.
Go.
So LoCastro, 25, all alone. But yeah, Tyler O'Neill, really, this Cardinals team, we've been talking about it for weeks now, about chasing the Cardinals because of how many games they're going to have to make up and how many plate appearances that these guys are going to get, these regulars are going to get. You do have to remember, just keep in mind, 7-inning doubleheaders, of course. So if he's only playing 1/2 of a 7-inning doubleheader, a guy who's been living in the bottom third of St. Louis's lineup probably only gets to the plate 3 times in that game. You're not getting your fourth time to the plate basically as a guarantee in these 7-inning games. But still, with the power that we expect him to have and the playing time that is coming his way over this week, a pretty easy claim if you need power.
Yeah, let's stay in the outfield for our next player. Let's talk about Edward Olivares a little bit. The Royals are playing without Jorge Soler right now. He's got an oblique injury, but even before Soler went down with the oblique, Olivares was playing a lot. He was, of course, part of the trade that sent Trevor Rosenthal to San Diego. We've seen a lot of players that have made the leap from AA to the big leagues this year because there hasn't been a minor league season, and most of them are showing a pretty significant jump in strikeout rate. That is true of Edward Olivares, but I like him because he brings power, and we saw lots of speed last year at AA. I mean, 35 for 45 on the base pass at AA doesn't always translate to that many green lights in the big leagues, but it's weird to me that he hasn't contributed in that category yet. I think that could still be coming down the stretch. I just like this guy as an all-around potential five-category player. It might be bumpy production in the short term, but the key here, he's playing, and he has ways he can help you.
Yeah, and I don't think you're too concerned about him not playing suddenly over the last 2 weeks of the season, first and foremost. Who knows if Jorge Soler gets back. Secondly, this is someone who they traded for clearly to be part of the future. They cashed in Rosenthal when they could, and for a pretty nice price from San Diego. Edward Olivares is someone who could be an important player on a good team at some point in his career. So I think that you're pretty safely locking him into this team's lineup every single day. Maybe he gets an off day here or there, but if they've got got however many games they got left. I bet old Edward Olivares is playing all of those with a maximum out of two. So you feel pretty good about the fact that you're going to get plenty of plate appearances. You're going to get plenty of opportunity from him. And I think it is bettable that he runs a little bit over these last 2 weeks. Let's see this entire skill set. Let's see what he's going to be for 2021. Another guy, like you said, this is totally different from the pitcher discussion. Every single guy we've talked about are guys who I could see myself claiming almost no matter what my team, quote, needed over these 2 weeks.
Yeah, and largely, I mean, look, bidding at this point is just all up to what you have left. If you have some money, spend it, push it up a little bit. If you need steals and you're bidding on one of the stolen base guys, if you need power and Tyler O'Neill's the best option in your league, it's not a big deal if you spend most of your remaining fab on him because there's not that much time left to spend it. I want to ask you about Jed Jerko. He had a couple home runs in that 19-run outburst for the Brewers on Wednesday. I think the Brewers have scored 3 runs in the 2 games they played since, so yay, the offense is really firing at this point. But Jerko has started 4 straight games, and he's playing more against righties. He was in the lineup on Saturday against Kyle Hendricks. I think he's the primary first baseman at this point. You can use him at both corner spots. Got some favorable matchups with the Royals coming to town next week. You get the Cardinals there as well as some doubleheaders, so you're getting lots of games. You're getting pretty nice matchups. Am I overlooking anything with Jed Jerko that would lead you to say that he's too risky to add from a playing time perspective?
I don't think so. I really don't think you are. I think you're probably right, excuse me, about him being the team's primary first baseman over these next 2 weeks. So I think I would feel pretty decent about him. Again, a guy who, what you like about Jerko and what maybe differentiates him from some of these guys that we've talked about. And again, it's going to be hard to really differentiate between some of these guys. But what we like about Jerko is that we've seen him over multiple years in his career have these stretches where he is a really useful fantasy player. I mean, Jed Jerko is almost always owned for some stretch of a fantasy baseball season. And you hope you get him during his hot stretch, or you pick him up when it looks like a hot stretch is starting. And you know that eventually this is going to end and maybe you're dropping him at the end of it. But he is pretty much always owned, maybe even by multiple teams, during an entire season. So this is not something where we feel like he's just catching lightning in a bottle and you're getting lucky here. A guy who has a 30-homer name or a 30-homer season to his name, a couple other 20-homer seasons to his name. The skill set is bettable. We're comfortable with it, and I think you can feel pretty good about what you're going to get out of him the next couple of weeks.
Especially with a lot of games at Miller Park on the schedule too, getting a nice park boost for the upcoming week. Let's talk about one of the catchers that caught my eye this week, Ryan Jeffers. Former second-round pick of the Minnesota Twins, got to the big leagues in 2 years, which is pretty impressive. And he's been good everywhere he's played, at least 20% better than league average at each stop in the minors. He's got a couple of home runs already. Now, Mitch Garver's getting close to returning from an oblique injury, but Garver was struggling before he went on the IL, Beller. And if you're in a two-catcher league, you're looking for somebody who's in a good lineup, brings power to the table, and a good eye at the plate. I think Ryan Jeffers actually is pretty safe. I think he's inside the top 30 among catchers the rest of the way.
I agree with you completely. I have no concerns about his playing time, at least in terms of the fact that he's going to get some. Mitch Garver is the guy for this team when he is back, but this is a team that is certainly headed to the playoffs, and they're going to ease Garver in, right? They're not going to just throw Garver out there and have him catching every single game or 5 out of every 6 games when there's only 2 weeks left in the regular season. He's missed as much time as he has, and he's missed as much time as he has with an oblique injury, and he was struggling before he even went on the IL. That's just too teetering of a cake to throw right in there, to throw right on the beautiful serving dish right off the bat. So this team needs him healthy in October. They're going to ease him back in. Jeffers is going to get his playing time. I feel pretty good about him being a guy in a two-catcher league really, really easily, actually.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about him, actually, and curious to see how they're going to split playing time in the future. I think they've got two excellent catchers in Minnesota, because I believe Garver was going to bounce back from that really slow start. One other player getting a lot more playing time, Josh Rojas. He's come up in the column recently. He's come up on this pod, I think, in past weeks as well. He's got second base and outfield eligibility. It's been a really empty line from him so far. He had time in Arizona last year after they traded for him, getting more run now because of the injuries to Ketel Marte and, of course, the trade of Starling Marte. Do you like Josh Rojas? I mean, I feel like you can't write him off based on 50 or so games of inconsistent opportunities for Arizona, but I'm beginning to at least wonder if some of the things he was doing in the minor leagues were the result of being old for the level while he was in the Astros system.
Yeah, this is easily the guy I like the least in a vacuum of the hitters we've talked about. 15-team mixers, perhaps, and I would still probably need to be really feeling as though I needed some sort of reinforcements. This would have to be, I don't want to say desperation play, but I wouldn't feel great about the ad even if I was going into the ad with eyes wide open and knowing I needed, you know, a player to add to my team. It's just really a pure playing time and hope situation if you're adding Rojas.
Yeah, that's how I look at that situation as well. Now, for drops, I think it's getting a little easier to find players to let go. Ketel Marte could be back with that wrist injury at some point this year, but the Diamondbacks really don't have any incentive to push him back into the lineup. They're long shots to make the playoffs at this point, given the nature of his injury. Give him extra time to rest. You know, why risk it? Now, I think we'll have a lot of talk about him in the offseason. Where'd the power go? Like, that's a fair question to ask. Just two homers and 173 plate appearances after he hit 32 a season ago. We found out on Saturday Matt Chapman will have hip surgery on Monday. His 2020 season is over, so a pretty big blow for the A's and for fantasy owners alike. He, of course, is a drop in redraft formats as well. I mentioned Jorge Soler earlier with that oblique injury. He hasn't been ruled out for the season. Again, a key part of the future, though, and those injuries rarely are minimum IL stays, so I would err on the side of letting Jorge Soler go if he needed that roster spot this weekend. The veteran Howie Kendrick has a hamstring injury that's been nagging him all season. He also hasn't played the level we saw a year ago. Nats are in that D-backs position of not really being near the playoffs, so I think he's an easy drop as well. And for some reason, if you've held on to James Paxton this long, it's time to let him go. He's just not the guy that we wanted him to be this year. The velo was way down, and now Aaron Boone came out, I think, a couple days ago and said there's no guarantee that he's coming back this season. So if you needed that little extra nudge from the team to say, okay, I can let James Paxton go, that nudge has been given.
Yeah, I think you're right across the board here. All these guys, none of these guys, I bet we don't really see any of them the rest of the season. So it's not even like you're, quote, risking anything with these injuries, and disappointing years pretty much across the board, except for with the exception of Matt Chapman. So these are guys who I like a lot of them. I was on Ketel Marte, I was on Jorge Soler coming into the season, so hopefully these guys can just get right, get healthy over the offseason, bounce back, and be ready for 2021.
Yeah, I think the early report I saw on Chapman is that he's expected to fully recover and be ready to go for the start of 2021, but it's way too early to know for sure, of course. You got to wait until after surgery is performed to understand if there's going to be an impact on his availability to begin next season. I had one more Twitter question that came in. This one came from Thunder McRobert. He or she would like to know, do you have any waiver regrets? Meaning, do you wish now that you'd gone bigger earlier in the season to maximize playing time, or do you still think the players available now will move the needle enough?
I don't think I do. I mean, I was pretty aggressive early on. I was saying, I'm always a pretty aggressive bidder. I like to be aggressive early. I think, if you feel good about a player, obviously the earlier you get that player, the more he could potentially contribute to your team. So I feel pretty good about this, and I think, you know, if there's anything to take away, it's that hopefully we never have to have this waiver experience that we had in 2020 ever again.
I don't want to experience anything from 2020. the unique things of 2020.
Yes, right.
I'd never want to experience a pandemic again. It's been horrible. I'm grateful that we have sport back. I'm glad we've had a 60-game season. But I've said this before, I feel like Fab on the weekends has just not been quite as much of a fun exercise. I think it's because we have to make decisions on players that we generally would have more time to make. So it just feels like all of the decisions I had to make earlier in the season with drops and trying to assess players, they just felt rushed because of the urgency of a season where every game is worth 2.7 games, right? I think that's part of where that reduced enjoyment of Fab has come from on Sundays. I also think, though, part of it is on a nice day in the summer, and since the season started in July, there have been a lot of nice Sundays. the last thing I wanted to do after spending most of my time indoors for the previous 4 months was right. to sit at my computer for 4 hours and dig in every single corner. And I realized, look, it's my job. I do it. It wasn't quite the same joyful experience that it was in past seasons. But hopefully Ads and Drops has been helpful. Hopefully this podcast on Sundays has been helpful, because this pod has been enjoyable to host despite the grind in the afternoon. The morning pods have been a good time. And if you've been enjoying these pods, you're enjoying everything you're hearing here, you want to get the written version of what we talked about, you want to get fantasy football coverage, the best team-by-team coverage of major sports in the U.S. and in the U.K. Premier League season is back too. You could sign up for The Athletic at just $1 per month. Go to theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast. That is easily the best offer we've had since I started up with The Athletic a little over a year ago. So for Michael Beller, who you can find on Twitter at @mbeller, I'm at Derek Van Riper on Twitter. Thanks for listening. We are back with you Wednesday for Under the Radar. ¶¶